maximum, really.
Maybe it happens as long as it did, but it's...
I'm Natalie Gordon, I've been on the planning commission since like March, was it March?
Plus 8 years.
Yeah, plus 6 years before. And in my real life, I'm a program manager at the State Board of Education and a school interest person.
Beth O'Ward, I'm an attorney, I've been on the commission for 2 years, almost 2 years, and I'm also a stay-at-home dad.
Andrea? Sure, I'm out of motion, but...
I think I've been here for 6 years, I'm not sure.
What's your name?
Andrea. I think I've been here 6 years and I'm staying home, so...
And how old is she being here?
She's 16, today.
Woo!
The most time I've been on the planning commission for 6 years and I work at the Wasatch Front and Council, is my day job.
Brianna Larson and I have been on the planning commission almost 2 years also, and I am stay-at-home parent, as indeed.
My name is Steve Gunn, I've been on the planning commission for 25 years.
You should be.
I'm retired, but my wife makes sure that I'm not retired.
I get retired every day also, I'm a general contractor, I've been on the planning commission, I'm not sure, six, just under six, somewhere in there. Give or take.
Yeah, it's gonna do six, so we should under six it.
Everybody knows me, I'm Shay. I've been here 4 years now, four and a half, four months, four and something like that. And the length was at 24.
I'm in my first year on the city council. I'm a lifelong resident and I'm an operations manager with the independent contractor of FedEx.
Ryan Muffer, second term as city council member, and I am a controller in corporate finance for a company in Westport.
I'm Stan Porter, and I have been around 26 years. Planning commission and city council, and 5 terms on the city council, and 3 terms on the planning commission. As before, so... Anyway, has been 26 years, but...
Well, I will, I'm the mayor.
What are you doing in real life?
I'm a bum.
Brian Horrocks, in my real life, I manage commercial real estate downtown, Dallas mostly, with a sprinkling of warehouses and other central items. And it's probably my fault we're here tonight. I made a little innocent comment one day, like, maybe we should look at general plan again and evaluate how it's happening. So, apologize, Melody.
I'm Mr. Baskin, and I served on the planning commission 2 terms and the city council this go around. And I'm a lawyer and an administrative law judge.
We shouldn't forget Linda. She's our city recorder. Do you want to sing?
No.
Linda's responsible for such a nice dinner.
I worked all day.
I'm Ken Leatham. I'm the city manager, and I've been with the city since 2010.
And Kate.
I'm Kate Barrett. I'm the city planner. I've been here a little over a year.
I've lived here for 1972, I don't know what I do.
47.
47 years now, and we've been on Labor Day. And I was on the planning commission for 5 years at one time. I have no desire to be on the planning commission again later. I'm not running for any office. I enjoy coming and keeping track of what's going on in the city and asking a few questions here and there about different things. And I mean, I grew up in the city, and I like to see it grow in a way that's fair to people, and also our safe community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to know that I'm a 30-year Davis County resident, and I've been here now.
I have been there for 10 years, and I was on the planning commission for 6 years with several of the people here. Well, I find good finance, so. With that, I'll turn the time over to Trey.
Great, thank you, Matt. We want to, we very much want you to discuss what you need to talk about in this meeting, so I'll try to be brief. But I thought it was important for us to have just a couple of things in our minds before, as we start this meeting, things you can think about. And I try to take advantage of this privilege once in a while, I tell a story. So I'm going to take a brief moment and tell a little story, but it's really relevant to what we're doing tonight. In my very first job, which was a very long, long time ago now, I had a weird request from my employer. They asked me to be a witness in a case where the city was being sued. It was a zoning and land use case. And they said, you know, we need somebody to go provide expert testimony about the zoning ordinance and, you know, pretty vanilla, answer some questions. And so I was brand new. Well, I'd been there about a year. And I was surprised that they asked me to do it, but they must have thought it was a pretty easy case. And it turned out that it was. But I'll never forget, this was a lesson I learned through that case. When I was there offering testimony for the city, the attorney for the plaintiff, who was a property owner suing the city over a zoning dispute, the attorney asked me why the city's zoning ordinance had the provision in it that it had that was under dispute. And I tried my best to answer that question. And then he asked, does the city have the authority to have this provision, to have adopted this provision and imposed it on landowners? And I was in that very time I was finishing up a college degree, and I was in a planning law class, and so I knew the answer. So I said, yes, the city has the authority to pass any reasonable provision that it believes is necessary to carry out their general plan and their zoning, have the zoning tools that they need, those powers are granted to them to do that. It made a real impression on me, and I've worked in a lot of cities, as some of you have talked to some of you about. And I just wanted to remind us, as we think about what we're doing in the city, week after week and month after month, and we look at, as we think about amending the general plan, and we'll be talking and thinking about amending the zoning ordinance, the city really can determine what it wants to look like in the future. We can deliberate and adopt any sort of reasonable provision and regulation that doesn't break a law, that's not illegal, that's not arbitrary, that doesn't treat one group of people different than any other group. You know, there's some limitations, but by and large, if we stay within the law, there's a lot of creative thinking that the city can engage in and can adopt in their provisions. And I just wanted to remind us all that the reason we engage in the general planning activities is so that we can adopt a vision for the city. And the reason we have codes is so we can implement that vision. And so that's really what we're talking about when we talk about the general plan. Is that the city is in control of its destiny. We're in control of our urban form. We can decide what we want it to be, and we've in fact done that. And so, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, I'm going to do this. So let me just go through very briefly. Many of you have already know this, but we updated the city's general plans, which had been adopted in the 90s. In the beginning of 2011, and it took us a couple of years. We held several workshops, and we adopted the plan in May of 2013. Here's some pictures of some workshops that we did. we really had not visited land use planning in a comprehensive way since the 90s. And so this is an opportunity for us to look at all the different areas of the city. We looked out west, we looked along Highway 89, we came up with some ideas that got incorporated into the plan. I'm not going to go through the entire thing tonight, but we came out of this exercise with the idea of wanting to provide balanced land uses, a town center, and we were really looking at our corridors for how to place those and project those land uses that we were talking about. That's kind of a big summary. By the way, Ted Knowlton was the consultant that assisted us and facilitated this process before he was on the planning commission.
Oh, your fault, Ted.
So, it really is all Ted's fault. No, it's my fault. If you're looking for a fall guy, it's me. So we adopted 9 chapters in the general plan in 2013. All really terrific chapters, and if you haven't read them recently, some of it will put you to sleep, but if you look at the pictures like I do, it's pretty interesting. You can get some good ideas of what we're doing. This was the land use plan, that's what we call our future land use plan. Some general assumptions about the city. We had some general goals in our land use plan. Again, the idea was we were looking at this corridor here, we were looking at Highway 89, we were looking at the idea of the town center. We looked at all of our commercial nodes and made some assumptions and some plans for those. The general plan had a lot of discussion about housing as well, and where we would put medium and high density housing to meet housing demand. It also had some interesting concepts, and I just kind of wanted you to remind you, and by the way, Sherry put these slides together for us tonight, that it had some areas where we knew we wanted to have more discussion, so we talked an awful lot about the Kimball properties, if you remember. We even had part of this planning process had an artist who came in and drew some concept plans with pens right during a workshop. And we did that here, and we did that along here before these marketplaces and that plaza was put together. We really didn't know what we were doing here, and so we had some concept plans drawn in different areas. So we call them village centers. The plan identifies corridors, Orchard Center, which is really the town center, and activity centers, one of the things. So I mentioned the town center. This was the concept plan that is right out of the adopted plan. It's the town center master plan, and the idea was that we would have pedestrian circulation, we would have an expansion of Hatch Park, we would concentrate on mixed uses right around Center Street and Highway 89, and then we would put multifamily housing and higher density along 3 principal transit stops for a bus rapid transit system. And we're in fact doing those things right now. But the idea was that we wanted to develop a town center master plan. So following up with that, one of the goals we said was that we wanted to do a master plan for the town center. So in 2015, we embarked on that process, and we adopted a plan just for the town center master plan area in 2016. That plan did a number of things, did a lot of things. It established more specifically the locations of our bus rapid transit, made some assumptions about transportation, and made several assumptions about design. So we had details about street cross sections and urban design, which we've in fact begun to implement. So there's 2 projects. One, the Town Plaza project across the street where the bowling alley used to be is the first project that has implemented this design. In fact, these diagrams were actually put into the development agreement for the Town Plaza project, I believe, or a form of those diagrams. And so this is kind of the result. So, you know, the city went and picked a street lighting option that we thought was attractive. We have detail on it, like this, on the base of the street light. These are big changes for North Salt Lake. And the plan really had an urban design concentration in it. These are some pictures that I've just taken as I work near the city center project. These three images are different stages of construction for that project. And this is a big change, one of the principal corners of the city center. So this is the Odell Crossing project, one of several multifamily projects that we have on Highway 89 that we've kind of done on purpose in the general plan. So we've also looked, moving towards what we want to talk about, some time ago, Sherry and her staff did an analysis of kind of what properties were available still in the town center. We looked at assemblage possibilities, and we, because we have such a strong market, we have people out, investors and people who want to develop are actually looking at these kinds of opportunities. And it's always amazing to see what people are working on. That was kind of the north half of the town center. This is the south half of the town center. So we have lots of properties that could be redeveloped.
Those are acreage numbers?
And those are, sorry, those are acreage numbers, yes. So I kind of used that information today together, and Sherry had done a map some time ago. This is probably, what, a year and a half? Maybe? I think it was with our...
Maybe three years ago.
Yeah. So, time just flies when you're having such a good time. Anyway, I took a look at this and those other maps, and we have approximately an estimate. We have about 220 new units that could be put into the town center along Highway 9.
Describe it and explain units.
So this would be if we developed the parcels that we sort of projected would be available for development, we could probably put in another 220 units of multifamily like we've been doing.
Okay. Is that within the existing zoning, or does that require
zoning? It requires P district changes, probably, and assemblage of property. But when we talked about this before, we kind of did this analysis, and I don't know if you remember the number, Sherry, but it was like 800 or 900 units before, and all those units are now down here. We've entitled about 725 units in different levels of entitlement that are going to be completed, yet to be completed. But this number is made up mostly of the projects on the south end of the city. So Eaglewood Village, the city council just looked at a 440-unit project here, and then the Williamsburg project, which is not Williamsburg anymore.
It is Williamsburg.
Oh, is it still Williamsburg? Okay. I keep calling it that, and I almost thought it was.
But it is.
Anyway, another 200 units there. So, and that's really kind of where I think the build-out is gonna end. But, you know, you can see we're going to have another 900 units, 950 units in the town center that don't exist today. So I thought it would be helpful to tell you quickly, what are we working on today? This is, as I said, this has been a project that we've been working on at least since I've been here, and probably before then. But so for the last 9 years, we've been working on all kinds of things. But we're working today on the Main Street Neighborhood Plan, which we can talk about, form-based code ordinance. We are working, just recently the council adopted a moratorium so that we could look at our residential zones, which we want to talk about tonight, I'm sure. A Hatch Park redesign, we've started that process. And the Davis-Salt Lake City Connector, or the BRT project, which is in an interesting phase right now. It's got some funding to do an engineering study, so that's moving ahead. That's a multi-jurisdictional project. What changes or tools have we made to implement the plan? We made changes to the P district. It didn't used to be allowed in every zone. It also had a minimum size that was much bigger, and we've changed that to accommodate the goals of the town center plan.
Just to correct that, it was allowed in any zone, but it had to be a minimum of 5 acres unless it was in the CH, unless you were transferring from CH, which is the highway commercial zone. Because we have P districts that were out in Foxborough.
Thank you for that clarification. I got that wrong. But we did definitely change the minimum size. So we have adopted some street cross sections and design guidelines in the town center. I kind of went over some of those. We've acquired property at Hatch Park, which is awesome. We only have 3 left to go. And then we've used tax increment and impact fees to incentivize the projects that we wanted to incentivize. So this project up here at Town Plaza and the City Center project, both recipients of some of this incentive money. So some questions we thought would be important to consider today. Are we happy with the plan's vision? Do we want to make changes to the town center plan? What changes do we make to the Redwood Village? And other issues would be, we've discussed updating the parks, trails, and recreation element of the plan and amendments to the residential zones and zoning map, like I just mentioned. So we don't want to lead the conversation necessarily. Those are things that, as we talked, that is, when I say we, Sherry and the mayor and I, as we got ready for tonight to help the discussion, these are questions we wrote. You may have other questions that are even better, and I hope you do. I have a couple of maps that I'll just hand out to you that might be useful for us to talk. And then Sherry, I'm going to turn a minute over to her, has put together kind of a worksheet, which we think will be helpful as you might want to take notes on it tonight or, you know, use it however it's best for you to use. So I want to pass some of it down. You'll meet in the middle. Sherry, you want to take a minute? For a second.
So this, these are just some of the things that, a list of things that I think that we need to work on. And I started with ordinance priorities, and these are not in any particular order of what I think is most important. What I really wanted to get was some feedback from both the council and the planning commission on what items you think are most important, what your priorities are that we should be working as staff so we can bring those changes back to you. And then a general plan on the back page, but I started with ordinances. And these were just off the top of my head, and that's some of the lists that I've made of things that we needed to go through. And I would really like some feedback about the moratorium and what changes you'd like to see with the R17 and the RM7 and how you envisioned that, what you were thinking when you wanted that. We're working on the form-based code, so that's in process. We have some issues with conditional use and permitted uses as far as compliance with the state code, so that's just an update that needs to be made. We talked previously about site plan changes to make sure that there's some other requirements in there, like pedestrian connections that are not in there right now. Some updating of the subdivision ordinance as far as maybe streamlining it a little bit. It's really repetitive when everybody has to come to 6 meetings for a simple subdivision, so we're wondering how can we make this better for both the planning commission and the city council, but also for the applicants as they go through that process. And then the sign ordinance, we really need to update our sign ordinance so it's in compliance with the Gilbert case law, as well as some of the things it doesn't address. It doesn't address new kinds of sign types. It does, the sign sizes are really excessive, the sizes that are allowed. It doesn't really address lighting and things like that. And then some of the smaller things that we need to deal with are food trucks, how are we going to handle food trucks, how are they licensed, where are they allowed. A good landlord ordinance needs to be updated because there have been some state code changes on that. Obviously, there are some state code changes for tobacco and alcohol, but we also need to address our code for medical cannabis and with the special session that's going to be put in place when they're going to go to not health department pharmacies. We're going to have to address where we're going to put those pharmacies. So that's something we probably want to get on right away. We had a couple of concerns on our appeals ordinance and code enforcement ordinance from our ALJ, so we want to address that. And I know if any of you noticed along Highway 89, it's not in North Salt Lake, it's in the unincorporated portion of the county, but you see some containers that are stacked up three high. Those had to be allowed in the county because they didn't have an ordinance against it. So I think that's been on my list. That's something maybe we want to address so that we don't end up with. I don't have a problem with containers that get rehabbed and look different. They look and they fit in the neighborhood, but when they just plop them down and they still look like they should be on a cargo ship, I have a feeling we'd have a few neighbors that would be upset if their neighbors put that in their backyard. So that's on my list. And then I just provided some blank spaces there so that we could have some dialogue, and then in the general plan review kind of goes over some of the same questions. Do we want to review it? Do we think it needs revision? Are there tools we're missing that we need to implement? It, you know, what is the solution to what we may be concerned about? But with that, I think we turn it back to you and see, well, see what your priorities are.
Okay. Appreciate this. And I guess as I look at this list, we could easily go to midnight talking about some of these things. So I'm going to just... I want to just kind of cut to the chase. Years ago, Linda and I were on the Isle of Rhodes, Eastern Mediterranean. And we were going along in a taxi, and I couldn't help but notice that every house, didn't matter if it was, these were these cement block houses, one story, two story, three story, didn't matter, they all had rebar sticking up out of the roof. And I said to the taxi driver, how come no one's finished their house? Well, it's taxed differently if it's not finished. And so no one finishes their house, literally no one. And that's one of those unintended consequences of government. And so here we are 6 years later. What were the unintended consequences that happened from it? So as Kim went through his general plan, I fell in love with it all over again. I think it was awesome. They had lots of input. They had lots of great ideas. I like where we're going. But here we are 6 years later. One of the unintended consequences, there were things we couldn't foresee. We didn't foresee that retail was going to die. We didn't foresee that winemakers was going to go out of business and something had to take its place. And unlike the Planning Commission, which is immune from public scrutiny and pressure, we're getting hammered. I try to look at every project that comes before us on its merits. And it's good. Got my vote, you know. But the unintended, you know, after a few years of this, we're getting inundated, and the residents are pushing back hard. They've had enough. And we're throwing that on the council, and we're starting to back against some projects. Projects that you, good people, have spent time and worked on and approved. And so that's kind of where I went to the, we all need to be on the same page. If we've lost our appetite for approving large multi-tenant housing, we need to get the Planning Commission with us on it. And so that's why I thought we wanted to be here. So all this stuff is great. And I think we can look at the sign on it, says down the road and that. But the real question is, when do we say when, and are we there? And I know Stan would like to talk about the R17 zone, and that may be a good place to start, but I guess, and I really respect Ted and his expertise, and I know, you know, you guys are doing planning through 2050, how are we going to fit everyone in, and do we make Tremont in the next big metropolitan area and build 8 more lanes on the 15? Or do we go north of Lake and say, loosen up your zoning, people? And so that's the discussion I like to have. Are we there? You know, people tell me, no more apartments. No more apartments. I don't know if that's...
Don't tell me you just approved it.
I guess that's where I'd like to go. And without derailing the rest of the meeting, how do we feel as a community? What kind of city do we want? Okay, I'm going to shut up now and not say another word.
Can I say something?
That's the point.
I think I've been affected by this plan more than anybody, and I felt really bad because I really didn't want to move. That came down to the fact that I worked hard on this plan with everybody else. I was at those meetings, and it was interesting the way Ted did the meetings. We didn't have a group where people could get up and just blabber out their opinion on what they liked and what they didn't like. Everybody had a little clicker, and they'd show pictures and talk about things, and people could vote silently for what they liked. And it didn't necessarily agree with everybody, the way people voted. You know, some people thought, oh, why are you doing that? And why are you doing that? So there's a vocal majority out there, too, that definitely didn't like the apartments. I kind of analyzed this thing, and apartments are kind of a concern because the people who live in apartments don't typically become residents. They just, they're there for a period of time, and they leave and go on, generally. Now, the for sale product, people stay around a lot longer. But I think that as I've talked to people, they're not campaigning and whatnot, people are losing a sense of community. But it's not just because we're putting in high-end housing, but that's what people are kind of wanting them to believe. I really think that people are losing a sense of community because we are getting more people in and people are moving. A lot of people, their property all of a sudden has become worth a lot more, and now they can move someplace else. And they're moving out, you're seeing neighborhoods change. And that change does not feel good to everybody, including myself, because my neighborhood changed a lot. And so you lose that sense of community, but I think the real issue here is what people know, we have a plan, and that we're trying to stick to the plan. And if they didn't like the plan, they should have been here when we were planning it. But I know that when we dial this up, a lot of this area was planned for commercial. And as we looked at it and how many years it sat there, and we just knew that commercial wasn't ever going to come. And so we could keep a bunch of vacant lots along there, which I'm sure some people would say that's what we wanted, and we would have been happy with that. But obviously people who are on that land wouldn't have been so happy if they, at some point they want to invest in it. So the R17 is giving me a little boost just because it covers some areas that we really never talked about putting a lot of high density in. And it, you know, with the duplex issue, we've got the one down on 150 now, which I had to go and talk to the neighbor, like these here, and he knows I've got plans with him, and said, look, I don't like either one of these plans in that neighborhood because it's too dense. But as you know, the apartment looked a lot better than the duplexes, because the duplexes would have had no control over. You know, they could have made them a lot bigger and a lot more rooms and no parking and all kinds of things. So apartments coming in. So that's where I came up with the R17 issue, but I don't know if there's a lot of land left as you look at the maps, but some of it will redevelop. But.
We're ever surprised to have dealt with some of the projects that have come in.
Yeah. So when I reflect back on the general plan process and what we heard from residents, you know, they're the ones to blame, right? It was a citywide dialogue, and it was utterly clear that people wanted a town center. That was the strongest finding, easily, of that process. And I have never gotten a feeling like that is, I've always gotten a feeling that is still supported. I think part of the challenge is what you talked about, Brian, that retail isn't what we thought it would be. So I think we got to look at the land use, the use question. How do we get retail in there if we want retail? Or maybe more broadly, what is the definition of a great town center in this day and age? So maybe there's some tweaking that way, but that's, I think that that's tweaking. Then we have lots of other parts of the city that are, you know, they're lower density, single family neighborhoods, and nobody's questioning the vision there. I think the thing that wasn't well clarified in the general plan are the spaces beyond the edge of the town center. And you know, now that actually includes the Weininger's. So we didn't have a clear answer to what do we do in those spaces. We can't look back to the general plan process because we never really asked those questions completely. And those questions, I always think it is too simplistic to say, well, the people that showed up to meetings and were vocal represent the entire city. But we don't know really what the city as a whole would say about those kinds of questions. There's a little bit of a void, and I mean, and it's partly related to what does North Salt Lake do with housing mix in general. I guess I a little bit lean towards that if we go want to ask those big questions, maybe we should check in with the broader community. If we want to, I don't think it is the right thing to do to just, let's say, as we're exploring the regulatory stance around the edge, to just listen to those that are immediately affected.
Can I just go back to that first question right there? I hope everybody feels comfortable expressing their opinions, because your opinions are welcome even if they're not what everybody else thinks. I mean, I think we'd all like to hear them. And so, one of the things that Brian said, and I kind of understand it, is are we happy with the plan's vision? And so, when we look at it, it's easy to put stuff down on a piece of paper, and then when it gets built, you say, huh, it's not quite what I expected. But I kind of like a lot of the stuff that we've done. I mean, I think you drive down Highway 81, and it looks better. And you drive down...
Well, you missed the bus out.
Don't
you?
You drive down Highway 81, and... You know, it looks better. There's still have to stuff to do.
How much you between that gallery back here, so it's very involved also.
I'm sorry?
Will you take how much from us, so it's involved also? I've been here for 50 years, like Star, and I've seen the city change. This piece that's up here was supposedly going to be the town center. Everybody wanted that to be the town center. People up on the hill, they want that to be the town center. I'm not sure what's going to happen over here in the old gravel pit area. Where it's sort of, this is the town center, but you look at it, and it's becoming more of a high-density residency. The one across the street was supposed to be, we're going to put some commercial there, it's going to be this drying point. It never was. Now there's sort of lost over there, and it's changed out of there.
Yeah.
Redwood Drive has become somewhat of a town center for the west side. We've got down here where Smith's is, which isn't in our city, but we have some on this side that is somewhat town center, but the buildings that are there are not drawing people in.
Yeah.
And so it's a city. It's not a stop here behind the shop. It's not a go-to city. So what do we want to do with that?
Yeah, let me. I probably let Ted talk to this, because if you read through the general plan, one of the things it talks about is if you want to have these things, if you want to have restaurants, if you want to have a little bit of shopping, which we don't really have a ton of shopping. I mean, we just don't have it here. But to have restaurants,
to have maybe some recreational opportunities, things along that line. That is, you really need population concentration. And I think if, when I went through the plan, what it said was, we're going to focus on getting residences in this area in the hope that we'll be able to attract some stuff. Well, that's the commission over here. We still have a fair amount of room up where that hasn't been developed in the town center on the east side, and so there may be some stuff that we can do there. There are two buildings going on up there. And maybe it was a bit of a bill of goods. And when I say town center to you, it means one thing. When I say town center to Ted, it means something. When I say town center to Bill, it means something. Our thoughts on town center are maybe a little bit different than what everybody thought. I don't know.
It's kind of like the term high density. I see that in Facebook posts all the time. I was around when nobody wanted to build Foxborough. They said, we don't want that high-density housing out there.
I voted against it.
Very good. Who was probably the one that was telling me? I had people on the hill. It'll be another Rose Park. They let us know that we should put Foxborough in, but we kind of saw that the need was there, and that we saw that the other option for Foxborough was some really ugly industrial. There was some
or nothing for 50 years, they were saying.
We had the one guy that kept coming in, and he said, well, I'm going to be dead before you put this in here. He died. And it was heavy industrial. It was stuff that would have been, I think, terrible for the city. So I'm really happy with Foxborough. I think we've got wonderful people that live out there. I think it's turned out beautiful. And I remind people, because there's still a few haters on the hill, and they'll tell me, remind me that they told me they didn't want Foxborough, and I let them know that the church activity in Foxborough happens to be higher than it is on the hill here. I hope you know that.
Is that a guide to how good it was?
Well, I kind of think it is. I mean, it's...
There's some people out there that have really added to our city. Did we make some mistakes out there? Absolutely.
But we've learned from them.
Yeah.
Well, we made mistakes on the hill, too.
Yeah.
I think everybody thinks when they grew up, that's how everything should be forever. But if you look at how homes were built 75, 80 years ago, tiny houses on little lots.
One car garage.
One car garage.
One car garage.
Yeah. Single bath. And that's how homes were built. And then through time, when we grew up, and as we continue to grow up, we've got this mindset that everybody has to live on, a quarter or a three-acre lot, and we have to have humongous houses, and that's what people should want, and that's what we should provide. But not everybody's like that. It is very, very expensive to provide services to large lots. It takes a lot of water. Where are we going to get the water to water all of these lawns and stuff? You're thinking about crime, but the problem that the crime's no different. It isn't really concentrated because you have higher density, and the crime per person's the same, but the crime per square mile might be a little bit higher. But these are nice homes that we're building, and the good people that live here. And I don't think we need to get stuck with this mindset of what our dream was when, we were having.
The Planning Commission takes a lot of public opinion, frankly more than we should. But a lot of, I try to categorize the comments a lot, and a lot of the times it comes down to change management. People just have problems with change. So I think it's just helping understand the dynamics that are in effect, that retail isn't going to hold its weight anymore, that there is a major housing crisis in our whole county, and the whole Wasatch Front. We need to be a part of that solution, and be a part of helping with the change management, rather than holding on to old ways, I guess. However, I think the general plan had the foresight for that. The way we've been enforcing the general plan has been right in line with what the developers are asking for, what the economy is driving our developments.
Can I add something?
No, go ahead.
Are you sure? I run a small business, and one of the things that I think about is what we're telling business communities and these small developers, what we're signaling to them we want in our city. And so we signal to them with the general development plan, hey, this is what we want, this is the type of development we're going to approve, but there's demand for lots of different building types, and what they're coming in with is outside of our general plan, and for a product that wasn't talked about in our general plan. So some really good examples would be on Main Street in our city. We've had a few large lots come in with small apartment complexes, or like eight, where it was 10 duplexes, where a single house was, that really doesn't fit the zone or the neighboring community and is not talked about in the general plan. So that was what I really wanted to get out of this meeting, was the part that I've had the biggest conflict with residents and the biggest discussions, right, because the general plan doesn't talk about at all right now. So it doesn't talk about high-density housing or development on Main Street, because that wasn't in our high-density, that's in the edges of our development. And then also I've heard people mention a sense of community, a sense of what we're at. So I think that we have a lot of different building types in North Salt Lake. And you have an opportunity to own a beautiful large lot on a third of an acre or a full acre. And you have the opportunity to own a very small lot that you don't have to do any yard maintenance at all. Or you can live in an HOA. You can live in an HOA with no yard maintenance up on the hill in Eagles Landing or Montclair. Or you can live down in Foxborough at different price points. You can live in lots of different apartments that are either really high-end, like I hope that our new development on 89 will be, with untucked under garages and parking and elevators, or a lower income threshold. So we provide a lot of building types, but I feel like where we run into the conflicts is where the edges of those items intersect. And so when someone wants a 14-unit or a 20-unit apartment complex in the middle of a single-family home development, and we get tons of pushback, but our ordinance right now technically allows it. Mm-hmm. And as a small business owner, I'd say, hey, you told me that that's what you want in this zone, because it's zone RM20. And then I come to city council, and every single member of the city council doesn't want to approve it. Nobody wanted to touch that RM20 development. Everybody thought it was a terrible plan. Nobody wanted it.
Which development?
The RM20 development on Orchard Drive.
132 South Orchard.
They took the two houses out.
And the kind of weird.
And the parking was weird, and it was on a super steep slope.
And it doesn't have any amenities.
And it has zero amenities, and the whole time we said, well, we need an amenity here. We need this to be something that fits into our community. We're right next to tons of single-family homes. Like, we need to, deal with this conflict, because this is where all the neighbors are going to hate it. But the developer never even stood up and came to the mic once. Sat in the back, because the developer knew the whole time that I am technically right. I am technically within the legal limit. So when you ask questions about it, the developer never even stood up and came and addressed them. Because why would they? They won, right? They got their 20-unit development. Eventually it passed. They're going to make all their money, and our residents won't be happy, and we weren't happy. It wasn't what we wanted. So what I want out of this meeting is to talk about those areas of the general plan doesn't address, that we're having those conflicts, and make sure we understand, what do we really want? Do we want Main Street and that area of the city to redevelop and to be medium, high density, and small redevelopment, and encourage redevelopment, and to tear down, 80-year homes and build 14 apartment units there? Or do we want those 1 acre lots that are really long, but we want a fixer-upper in North Salt Lake, and we want people to come in and clean up those homes and flip them and make them really pretty and add to our community? What do we want to signal to investment in our community? And that's what I really wanted to talk about. That's my thoughts.
For Main Street, we talked about that. It's the old part of town. You've got the Page property, you've got the property, you just said you're going to put duplexes in, you've got the next one north of there that has a couple of acres. There's about 3 acres or so in there. for my property, there's the ground property, there's a whole bunch of older homes on 200 North. What are we going to do with all those? The problem we get into is that if you take Gordy's property, which is the White House is vacant down there, just before you go on the freeway, Lady Howard, I don't know if you know what, which one that is. Nobody is going to come in there and put a $2 million house on it and say, I'd like the 1 acre lot. It just is not going to happen because people can't afford it. So what are you going to put in there? You're going to have to divide it into something, and that's what I would like to see come out of your planning here, is what are you going to do with my property? You've already said what you're going to do with Tidwell property over by the post office. I don't agree with it, but that's what's on the law. I think that you need to address the whole Highway 89 on our side of Highway 89 there, and even the property. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to allow people to park that's in there? How are you going to get into them? How are you going to manage that? You've already said retail is dead. I don't think we're going to have any retail down there. Car lots are temporary, and we've got three of them right now. So that's what I would like to see you do, is address what you're going to do if there's lots that are an acre big out there that are either vacant or have a duplex on them or one house on it. The houses are old. Nobody's going to come in and fix them up. That's probably my property. I don't have to let nobody wants to move into it and say, I'm going to take care of it. I can get ground back there because the rest of my residents have to be $400 a month of water.
Well, the Howard property had a plan that was approved and it's expired. So now that I'm going to start.
That's the reason I brought it up on there because they did approve it and there's a bunch of duplexes.
Yeah,
but
then
the
four
plexes
at the end.
Yeah,
8 units, originally
110. It was 12 altogether at one time.
No, I wanted 10. I think
that's what reduced it. How
many did it call it? 10. They sold it to another property owner and he didn't follow through on recording the plat. Said the market was couldn't support the finishes and now it's just sits.
If that's a fact and back to within another year or two.
Well, that's why we're here.
So what you're saying, and I guess this is something that Ted brought up as well, we didn't really plan for that section of town.
No, we didn't.
And look at that.
You did the highway down here so much.
We just assumed that's going to be where it is.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's saying retail is that we know where it is. I work in the new retail. I work in the delivery industry. I look at every development a little bit different than probably everybody else because I look at it, how are we going to be able to service these new residents? The problem is you're putting doors on the opposite side of garages where the driveway is. That is the worst, absolute worst delivery in the world. And you get more disputed deliveries and thefts on that type of a development. Every single time. And the reason why is because nobody uses their front door. Even if they have a doorbell camera, nobody uses their front door and they know. Thefts and thieves will always hit those because it's an alleyway. And that's exactly what we created at Orchard Grove. So that's how I look at it. And that's why I've hated a lot of developments that have come in. Not only that is I feel personally that we're going way over our threshold of high density.
Well, I think a good, helpful yardstick for the conversation is to look at different price points that meet different market segments and what kind of housing products those relate to. So that we can just have in our heads, well, what kind of housing products relate to very low income, low income, moderate income?
If you design those three, don't you just say, what's low income?
Well, very low. I'm not positive, but I think that's 25%.
30 to 50.
Okay. What does that mean in dollars, though?
So that's what I'm suggesting is that we may not be able to answer these questions right now, but I think we can can assess that and sort of have these things in our head to inform the conversation. Just with an eye basically towards, hey, the market's changed, affordability is different, and, you know, I think it's helpful to look forward. Now, that doesn't mean we have to stretch out multifamily into new areas, but we at least should have in our head, you know, what does affordability mean for different market segments, and how does that relate to the demands in different segments? And it doesn't have to be a study, it can just be a rules of thumb that we can have in our head. You know, and I think you did some of that work in the housing.
Yeah, so just on the moderate to low income scale. So the moderate income is considered to be 80% of the average median income, which our average median income for 2019, or 80% of the average median income is $68,000 per year. So that's a family of four. There's a sliding scale, so it's all over. I mean, it depends on how many families. If you have more, greater number of families, you can make a little bit more. If you have less kids, the scale slides a little bit. But this is for a family of four. So that's the 80% level, and that's considered moderate income. The low income is considered to be between the 50% and 80%, which the 50% is 42.5 of our area median income. And that, and then extremely low is 30% of the AMI, which is $25,750. And what your housing cost should be is 30% of that AMI. So if you're at the 80% level, you should not be exceeding $1,700 a month for your housing costs. And that's your housing mortgage or rent plus utilities.
That if you're making $68,000,
and then you meet the 80% AMI, and then if it goes down to low income is $1,062, and extreme low income is $643 a month in housing costs.
You know, the funny thing about what we're talking about, I think that time can change a lot of things. In fact, I've even seen a little bit of it since I've been on the Planning Commission. Say, for instance, 2 years from now, which a lot of people are predicting, we will enter into a recession. That's going to do nothing but drive everybody's property values, everything down again. Because I can remember the 80s when we went into that recession. I was building homes in California, big custom homes, 7,000 square foot homes. And it's people out of control. And we're getting to that point now where things are out of control. You know, you can build a, in California, I could build a custom home spec. And after it was done, I could ask another $150,000 more for it. That's how things were going. Rather than if I had pre-sold it and built it, you know. And I think a lot of what we're doing here too, a lot of the things that we're talking about can change. A lot of the things, you know, I look at what happened down here in the Kimball property. You know, remember at one time we had an idea that there was going to be a Walmart, a theater, big 3, 4, 5-story buildings going down there. I wouldn't want to be on the city council or the planning commission if something like that were to happen. Mm-hmm. It would be such a pushback you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So what I have done, and I feel, is the best thing that possibly could happen. The only thing is I'd like to see just a little more retail going with all of that commercial we're going to put in down there. And I agree 100% with what Ryan said a little bit ago. I really do. I'm starting to get the feeling too that what we're putting in some of these areas of housing subdivisions with this high density stuff, I don't know. I think we just about done it. I think we ought to think of something else.
So what's the answer, Kim?
Well, I think from a staff's perspective, let me just address a couple of things I think I've heard. I think that what I've heard is that the town center plan is a healthy plan that the market has responded well to, and that we think is the right direction for what is defined in the plan as the town center. I think when we talk about other areas outside of the town center, one of the reactions I think that the staff and the council has had to this development that Ryan mentioned in the R20 zone is to propose a moratorium so that the city council can make some decisions with the planning commission's help about what the right land uses and densities are in the residential zones found outside of the town center. And as I reminded the council a while ago when we talked about this, and I reminded everybody tonight, you know, you can pick the zoning, the density that you want to allow. We had some, because the market was strong, we had some creative people study what they could get done in the R20 zone, picked up some property and kind of forced it on us. And like you said, Ryan, I think I observed none of the six elected officials wanted to approve the project, but we felt like they had a right to develop because our zoning code allowed that. So we need to make that correction so that Sherry and I both and the other staff that are here working to implement this plan, that we know what you want, and we know what we can say to those who would invest and take risks to develop in the city, and that we can attract the kinds of projects that you're proud to approve. And so that's the purpose of the moratorium, I believe, is for us to think about those questions, come up with solutions for some of these areas, including the area Mr. Wallace talked about, because he's in that fringe, you know, area outside the town center. I think we've done a lot of work on this Main Street neighborhood plan, and so we need to press forward. I think, as Sherry and I talked, we want to get that plan adopted during the moratorium, come back to you with changes to the RM7, RM20, and R17, I think. Is that the zone? Yeah, R17.
Right. And the form-based code will take care of the town.
And the form-based code.
Those kind of, three of those things kind of merge together.
Right. So all those products need to be put together, put before you, so that you can make those decisions. And I really think we can, approve projects that everyone will feel comfortable with, if we can put some thought into what we want.
I don't know what a form-based code is. Can someone explain that quickly?
So the form-based code is the code that we're looking at to implement the town center master plan, and it deals with more of the design aesthetics on how the properties are redesigned. So we've been using the P districts instead of having, until we got the form-based code adopted.
So the form-based code will allow us to have some of the similar control that we have over areas without having to make them a P district.
Yes, and it addresses some of those edge neighborhoods. So I think that coming together with the draft of the form-based code, the Main Street master plan area, and then these tweaks to the what's outside that on the edges, the R17 and the RN7.
Which are not part of the form-based code.
Not all of them. There's a little bit of the edge districts. We come up with some of that solution, but not all of it.
Which ones?
R17 and RN7. But I guess one of the questions I have is, let's just take, for example, the Howard piece where they came in and they asked for 10 townhouses, I think is what it was. There was a duplex and two fourplexes. But they got four, or they got two fourplexes. If you were looking at that today,
and you, it's R17, what would you like to see on that 1 acre of property?
Can you tell us where it is? I live on the planning commission.
It's just north of pages and where pages are.
Yeah.
That's the property north of it.
Is it the house that Sheila lives in right now?
Well, that's the problem.
It's vacant. It's sitting right there. It's the yard, so not next one.
Oh, the one with the Polynesian family put the fun on.
Next to the Polynesian family.
Yes. No, that one.
That one.
The one that her Gladys dropped her cake.
It's Gladys.
Look down there. So it's not including the house that she will live in.
No.
And it's 9:40 in the morning on the ground in Medina, which is the whole...
She from Australia?
So Sherry, your question was, if we had this to look at again, what...
And you could have whatever you wanted. Would you want 3 1/3 acre lots on it? Would you want 4 1/4 acre lots? You want 5 7,000 square foot lots? I mean,
and that is me.
Or do you want to see twin homes or duplexes? Are they okay?
And the other side of this, let's be realistic here in the real world. This backs up on the freeway.
Right.
I mean, you know, you're not going to have single family homes.
No way. Not new ones.
Well, just north, just south of there, when you put in this new subdivision, a couple weeks ago.
I was just going to say, go back to what Ken said at the very beginning. You're going to have whatever you want. So, if you say, I'm sorry, this can only be a single family home by law, right? And it's one per acre. What we've done, in reality, is we said, well, this home is only worth about $100,000, $150,000. Because no one's going to pay any more for it because it's not worth anything. Now, if we go back and we say, you know what, I bet you could put 20 units to the acre right there because it's next to the freeway and it's a bad spot. Well, suddenly that $150,000 home is worth $1 million because the developer can buy the home and tear it down and build 20 units to the acre. What we have to do is decide what we think is the right decision for this parcel, and then let the free market build whatever they're going to build. So if we say, nope, it's four units to the acre and it's all we're going to allow, they're going to come up with a creative solution that works, and the lot is going to sell for a price that works for what we allow. Mm-hmm. Now, it may not sell today, and it may sell in 5 years, but it's going to sell for whatever we allow. But if we say, I think you could put 20 units to the acre, I bet a developer would look at that and probably want to redevelop it tomorrow because they would have a really good deal. So I just feel like we get to set the decision, and then the free market will take care of it. And it may be in 5 years or 10 years, but they're going to take care of it.
Yeah, you go back to my original, or you end up with rebar sticking up out of it, and it's a crack house because they can make a lot of money that way. You know? So yeah, you don't want the unintended consequences.
But are we changing the free market conditions of the current property owner by adjusting the zoning? I mean, he has rights to sell that for
$1 million.
And that's against the law,
anyway. And also, you've got the family. And that was one of my concerns when it came before. You've got a family there that is going to be encroached upon, especially if we're building 30-foot units and the windows are up that high and people can look out. I can tell you from experience that we steal people's privacy by allowing the high buildings that close to somebody's backyard. I mean, I kind of see that as a problem.
So we're in the middle of a moratorium, right? And that's kind of what really brought us together. Just looking at that and thinking about it, this is partly my understanding maybe of what would happen. In part, I'm about to list a few things, and partly maybe a way to skin the cat. Okay, wrong metaphor.
I liked it.
But,
I like cats.
Love you, food, that I suspect, generally, it's a good place to start, is right. let's get good design in current zoning.
I think that's
right.
Mm-hmm.
Sidestepping the density
housing mix question, part of the problem that we've had is we can negotiate good design if you go P district, but we have limited regulatory tools if it's not P district. That's a problem. And I know that that's I'm not saying something new with that. That's implied in your list of priorities. One. But a related question then is, should we do any tweaks or clarify when and where we think the P district should be used?
Well, maybe it's not a P district. Maybe it should stay R17, but should we have greater, if they do, if you want to give them what they're entitled to under the zone. So let's just say we all agree right now that 1 acre parcel is entitled to 8 units. But we only give them that 8 units if there aren't any second story windows higher than 20 feet, or there aren't any, you know, the setbacks from adjacent property are greater than the setbacks for a single family home, or the landscaping is more intense. I mean, are there conditions that we can put on that address the privacy of the neighbors and the height concerns and the good design concerns that they can use those to get their maximum density?
What if they're on the hillside?
I don't know. I'm
just concerned about that. We've also got to consider privacy on the hillside.
We need to identify what the issues are so we can find the solutions.
The beauty of the P district is you don't have to think of everything.
Right.
Yeah. And when you start writing laws, then you have to think of everything.
Well, that's...
And the other thing we have is we have a church that could very possibly be gone, and he's talking about moving.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What do we do with that church property there?
Well, that's why I was thinking maybe look at some of the hot packets too, but one of the thoughts I had with the RM7 zone, let's go back to the original zoning that we kind of had in mind, and say if you do want to put multifamily, it has to go P district, and then we can set those parameters to make sure that they're not building something that's going to tower over it, and we put that as part of the conditions that you put on that zone. You know, but because that was my one of my concerns with this one is that he went to the property owner and says, you know, we'll give you this much for your housing. So that's not enough. I want more. And he wasn't. I don't think he was holding out for a big amount of money. At least that was my impression. But the guy said, ah, you know, I don't want to pay that. We'll just build all these things around you. And that just what struck me is that's just not right. We shouldn't allow people to do that. You know, if they want to assemble some property and it's off next to the freeway and it's kind of, you know, you got Main Street separating everything else, I think you could put some density there without being offensive. But when you build right next to somebody's house on two sides of it, to me that seemed like that wasn't fair to that guy.
Well, why? Because he doesn't own that property.
Well, I understand that, but still he was in a residential zone anticipating 30-foot backyards. And so if you ask me to get the 30-foot cab, but the next guy next to you doesn't have to have that same setback. We've got an 8-foot from your 30-foot, and then all of a sudden you're building him 30 feet, then you're looking down in somebody's backyard and their back window and stuff. That to me feels like an encroachment on those people, and it's not fair to them.
Well, here's one of the things I see is problematic with the P district in these edge neighborhoods is that there's not really any clear guidance as to what it needs to look like. So the developer comes and makes a proposal like we did with, or, you know, like you did with Orchard Grove. They came in and asked for red on the property. And then we go through this whole public process back and forth of, well, should it be a 10-foot setback? Should it be a 20-foot setback? And we're negotiating all those things out. I think if we had some guidelines in these edge districts, these edge neighborhoods that said, yes, you can use this, but here are some of the basic guidelines that you're going to need to follow. We're going to want to see not lesser setbacks from adjacent properties that have single-family dwellings, but greater setbacks. Or we're not going to want to see three-story buildings. You're going to be maxed out at two-story buildings with the maximum height. You know, some of those basic parameters, and I think developers want basic parameters because it makes their job a lot easier. They're not trying to guess. Right now they're going, well, I'm just going to tell you what I want, and then we'll negotiate it and see where we end up at the end of the day. They're going to come in and ask you for what they want in the first place. But if they had a guideline that said, look, this is the box, and you're going to, we have flexibility in this box, but this is the outline of the box. Don't go outside of this box for crazy stuff. Give them some basic parameters, and then they're not wasting their time in engineering, and you're not wasting your time, and we're not stressing out the neighbors because they have a better idea of what they're going to get next to them. Cuts.
Yeah, the problem we have, though, is, again, with our current zoning and what it allows is pretty lousy.
And that's why we need to tighten that up.
That's why we need to make it so they can't come to us. I mean, I go back to the Eaglewood days. Sorry, Eaglewood folks, but, you know, I was under a lot of pressure then because people said, we don't want a golf course in our Salt Lake, you know. We think that's a stupid idea because we're not golfers and we think it's going to cost lots of money, and why would we want to put a golf course in there? The reality of it was is that the developers basically says, well, we don't have to build this golf course, but we'll just annex in the Bountiful. Because we're next to Bountiful, you can't stop us from annexing the Bountiful. And the thought was, well, if they're going to Bountiful, we get none of the taxes, but we'll still have all the traffic. Well, staff putting those traffic lights on the Orchard and Drive and all that cost would be ours to bear with no revenue to bring it in. And so the decision was made, I guess we better build the golf course and take in all that land up there, those nice houses up there that pay lots of taxes. And there is a windfall when you first build them. So that was kind of the decision. It wasn't the decision that we love golf courses and we have to have them in our city. It was, we need that land under our control.
So there's the Main Street plan, that there's some progress on that. I can't think of how it's addressing or a recommendation in it with regard to scale and density, but I'm sure that's it's natural for that to be part of it. There's the question of what's the transition? If there's a scale of X, how fast does it transition outside of the town center? Will we allow some stepping down, or does it just go this to that? We can answer that as a policy question generally, and then go to zoning. And then I wonder, you know, maybe just like we're addressing Maine, and there was a question about Redwood, do we come up with an urban design philosophy for Orchard Drive?
I agree.
And maybe it's not changing densities, but, and maybe it's not worth it in the sense that there's not a ton of property that's going to change on that street, but.
Well, this is a good segue. Ken, can you go to the top of 3800 South, just to the right, just there, on the same road, just zoom in right there. Okay, so Weiniger is just developed at the top of the screen, and it's on your map, just up here in the top there. So it's these parcels right here. So in the middle,
right.
So if you scroll down, Ken, just a little bit, right there. Okay, so if you scroll down, there's 5-acre lots on Orchard Drive right here. Each of those are an acre or close to an acre. They're single-family homes that have been there for 100 years. Many of them have been approached by landowners trying to consolidate those lands because, you know, like the Thompsons lived there, the Kemps used to live there, Mrs. Kemp died. So when they get approached, or a son or a family inherits the home, no one wants to live in the family home of an acre that's their grandma's home. So they want to sell it. They want to sell it for top dollar, exactly like you said, and I agree. If I inherited a home, I'd want to sell it for top dollar. So what happens when a landowner comes in and says, I have 5 acres here, I'm in a single-family area, I'm right on Orchard Drive, it's a minor collector, there's a bus stop right there.
That's a frequent bus route.
That's a good bus route.
Yeah.
What are we signaling to developers? Do we tell a developer ahead of time, in our general plan, no. This is absolutely not, don't even invest 1 cent of engineering because this is a no. Or do we signal to a developer, we're open to something, here's what we're open to, this is what we want. And I think it really helps the neighborhood and the citizenry when we tell people upfront what we're doing instead of, well, developer showed up and now we're kind of stuck. And, you know, like you said, this is real close to Bountiful, so we're going to annex into Bountiful. And by the way, there's an RM20 multifamily housing development across the street. So the developer's going to come in and say, this is already a multifamily development area. This should be a multifamily development area, and it's a bus route.
And we haven't had, we haven't had a vision. We don't know what our vision is.
So we should talk about it before a developer finishes buying all five of those 1 acre lots.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they're already in the process.
This is the property, and there's the property just south of the Winnie.
Exactly. And that's what I want to address in the time. We don't talk about the Orchard Drive corridor, but that's what we just dealt with on Odell Lane, with the Orchard Drive corridor. And it's a minor collector. What is it going to look like? And what do we want to signal to developers? Because if you tell them RM20 and you have 5 acre lots and they come in with a below requirement of only 90 units there, because they could do 20 units per acre, they could do 100, but we're only going to ask for 90, I think we're going to have a different vision for that spot than what the developer wants to build. But if I told a developer today, you could put 90 apartment units there, I bet all five of those houses would sell pretty darn fast. So I just think we want to set the vision before we get stuck with it like at Weininger's.
Do you want to go and get public input on this stuff?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think what Ryan says is exactly right. The top of Center Street, you could zoom in on that area next to the church on both sides. You've got some pretty big lots. And then we go to some other areas. And so one of the things I've been a little concerned about is the armature plan on here. I was going to ask you what that's on right now. The armature plan on 1100 North, that's all a vacant building now.
Oh, the GE?
Yeah.
The GE building?
Yeah.
It's MD.
So they'd have to rezone that one, but gosh, there's a big piece of property there where they could take that building and turn it into some of these other things, and people turn into, you wouldn't have to rebuild the building, just go in there and put some walls up inside and pile it
a ghost ship.
Yeah, well, hey, you look on TV and watch the sitcoms and people live in those things all the time.
That's another problem we've been told, and that's that the development that somebody thinks that they're going to be on the west side of the river over there on Center Street.
Except we really don't even talk about it because that's in Salt Lake's ballpark, and so they do something.
It's still in their future.
And also, can we talk about that later? Because I have some questions and some concerns.
Our attorney told us last week, why sweat it at this point? Because
yeah, it's out of our hands. But the point, it's the same concept as putting off course in Englewood. If that goes in, it's going to impact us. And so right now, it doesn't look like it's going to happen because Salt Lake is against it.
I was concerned, and I'm completely off topic, but I was concerned because we heard last Tuesday, two Tuesdays ago in our planning commission meeting, that the council didn't have a position on it. But earlier that day in Salt Lake County's meeting, it sounded like city staff was encouraging the development to come into North Salt.
What we were saying to them is, if this is going to happen, it makes sense it's in our city, because we're the ones that are going
to
bear the burden.
That's what I said to the county council.
If it's not going to happen, I mean, we're not out looking to grab land and increase our fiefdom. But if you're going to build something that impacts us and doesn't affect Salt Lake City at all, then let us control it. That's all.
I wanted to make sure I understood that.
And but Salt Lake City is definitely not going to.
Salt Lake City is against it. Salt Lake County might not be, but even if they approve it, there's a long process of public comments and everything else that has to go in before it ever happens.
As long as they don't think they already have a green light from Salt Lake, I think they're okay.
The correspondence that they sent, I reviewed, and basically it's like, if we're going to have this community, mm-hmm. in our community, then we have to make sure we can facilitate it. We've got to have the structure, the police, all of that. And that was the bulk of the letter. But there was a statement in the letter that said it's possible that there's going to be a community like this coming in, whether we want it or not.
And that's not what we
want. No, and that's the part of it that we don't want to say. We want to say we control our future, right?
Absolutely.
And we make decisions that are deliberative.
that makes sense.
They can't, they're not going to force it on us, and everybody has those concerns, especially those that have been in this mode of no more high-density housing. But we don't control that area over there.
I've been quiet, but I want to just say a couple of things. And that is, the first thing, in this climate that we live in, political climate, it's been very divisive. We see it from top to bottom, and now we're in a local city setting. And in some regard, it's not any different. Politics is personal. And I think that anybody on the Planning Commission or the City Council probably took a personal hit on the projects that we've been deliberately working towards. But I do think, in that regard, we need to do better as a city listening to the citizens, as well as we need to do a better job in having uniform provisions. And what I think that is the danger that we've got that's going on is the P district creates a perspective for the citizens that it's all discretionary, and that it's something that is kind of loose and just on a whim, we're going to decide this or that. We have got to cut that. We just got to stop that. We have to have a P district. If we're going to need a P district, it's got to be as firm as an R1 or an R7 or anything else. Because otherwise, we're looking like we are playing fast and loose and unfairly. And that is my main concern, is that we've got to make sure whatever our vision is, whatever it is, we must be consistent.
Yeah, I agree with that.
100%.
Well, based on what you're saying, something the mayor said before, too, is that at the risk of subdividing the city, I think it's almost imperative that we have these, that we have some charrettes representing the different areas in our city to garner public opinion. I think we're not doing a good job of localizing even more what those public opinions are.
And I really like the clicker idea, because, you know, there's always some in a group that really has a lot bigger opinion than everybody else.
Yeah.
And when they did the threads before and stuff, and everybody got to vote privately, it really surprised some people in the room. It was interesting to see those that you knew were outspoken against or for certain things just kind of come unglued almost when they went to the vote, and it wasn't their way.
Just talk about the personal, because I've definitely felt that. I've had some neighbors say, man, you guys keep giving yourselves a lot of power with those P districts. And I just tried to explain to them, and I think Sherry's been doing a phenomenal job of this, during our planning commission meetings, we'll explain what, if it wasn't a P district, what would we be getting?
Right.
You know, so we're trying to show people that, no, this is a protection for the city. This isn't our personal opinion running rampant.
So maybe we need to tighten down what they can do, you know.
Well, that's what
I'm in a P district, and therefore, you know, it gives us a lot more power.
Well, maybe we do form code ordinances and do away with the whole P district idea.
Well, that's fine.
Period. That to me is probably the swear word. Is the P district.
I think the mayor had a great point, though. You're going to leave something out.
The downside is the P district allows something really great that our form-based code will not account for. And, like, we're not going to get it here, but what if somebody came in and really wanted an amazing opera house, and they wanted it to be entirely like Mexico City, it's going to be all metal, it's going to be reflective, it's going to be incredible, but we're not going to have a form-based code that's going to account for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you need an avenue where you can say, okay, you have something incredible that we want to allow, and we're going to put it in our activity center, and it's going to be great, and we're going to make all this work. So do we need an avenue where we can allow something that is unique?
But you have that avenue.
Well, that's the P district.
They can come and apply for a code amendment to allow them to do what they need to do that you've never. No, just each person can file an application. I would like to change the R1 setting zone to allow dumps to be kept. All is in your control, but if you got something really cool before you, that somehow you didn't think about that, that you could change your code to think about it. You always, always have that option.
But it's changing existing zone, you gotta change it for everywhere. I mean, you just make a new zone.
So, I'm thinking about the people, because the land is still, it doesn't like it, but I look at the TLO building, which I understand people have problems with. But because of the two districts on both up, we were able to widen the street. We were able to get sidewalks kind of where we wanted to. If you have a form-based code, are you gonna be able to require amenities?
Yes.
Are you gonna be able to say, I want you to widen the street?
Yes.
Maybe, how do you do that?
That's our next work session, we'll bring you the code, I think that's what I'm saying.
So form-based code says, I always widen the street by 10 feet if you have a project in?
It says which street should be widened and which, what width they should be, it's
I think we've always had that ability to widen the street. As long as we have those,
then we're asking for subdivision.
When anyone subdivides a piece of property, you know, we can get the land and pick up the improvement.
Oh, yeah, we hadn't thought of it, but I guess.
If they'd come in and done a consolidated plan, like they just wanted to build an apartment complex with the 14 units they got, or whatever their units was determined they could have, I'm not sure, because they wouldn't have been subdividing, we couldn't have required them to widen it. That, I think, is the difference. Because they were subdividing.
The other thing I wanted to say is that if, unfortunately, I said this before, we're not Chicago. The whole city didn't burn down and we can rebuild it.
Thank goodness.
No, but I'm saying, that's why Chicago is a great city, because they were able to build it, right? They started, well, we aren't there. We are a city that's been incrementally developed. And for a long time, North Salt Lake probably was just the hinterlands, just outside of Salt Lake, and didn't get the kind of attention or the self-esteem that it needed. Right. So some of that is the historical analysis that you could put to it. But my point is that we've got to have a vision that incorporates what's real. We are not going to change what this city is. Right? We are a bedroom community. And we build a town square because we need one. And we want to have a city center, right? But how we are going to use some of this old property like the deals at, I don't think we can decide that. I think the market does, honestly.
On the other side, the market says, we've got an acre of ground, let's take Brown on Main Street again. We've got an acre of ground, there are 1.3 acres, but there's a house on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's a duplex lot. What can we build on it? Well, that property, depending on how you divide it up, may be worth $1 million, or maybe worth $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
If we put a $200,000 on there, somebody's going to build a house and it's going to be a duplex or one or something like that, and they're going to say, what a nice tour. And so I think you need to look at these little pieces of property and say, how are they going to fit the community? How are they going to be developed so that they fit in? And how are they going to be nice so that we don't have garden fit there?
Okay, but the point is, the master plan was, the criteria was balanced use, town square, and corridor. And I think town square and corridor we're like making great headway at. Like, balanced use. Who feels that what we've got right now is a balanced use of our land?
It doesn't feel very balanced.
But it's not something that we created.
It's the market. And when we get another recession, things are going to change completely.
But define what balanced is, because we have two-thirds of our housing stock is single-family dwellings. So what is balanced? Is it 50-50?
That's the big question.
Are we catching up because we built so many single-family houses for so long, or is the right mix 75-25? I don't know, but you have to set that policy and that vision. What do you think the right balance, the right mix of housing stock is?
And today, the market, we could build 10 times the apartments we're building. And they would lease in a heartbeat, because we are right next door to downtown.
And the truth is, when we looked at the Eaglewood lots, that whole area, the last time they came in and gave a proposal, we're like, why don't you make this one 9 stories high? Right? Because that's the location where all the dense, intensive housing should be. Right? That's truly the bedroom section. Right? But that's not what we're going to have. But what I'm saying is that that would seem to me maybe not like too balanced, but it fits with the area. So you've got these competing interests. What do we really want to have? What area is suitable for what we're doing? And it's almost case-by-case analysis.
I agree with that, but there also has to be long-range viewing.
Right.
Where if you go back to 12 years ago or 9 years ago when Foxborough was being slated, the balance at that point was very much like, oh, we are heavy on single family. Like, this is all we're building, this is all we're doing. And so that there has to be in the back, like, we did 12 years of Foxborough. And so it does feel imbalanced right now in the density, but during that cycle, it was very much, we are putting in so many single family units. So helping people see the long range trajectory of the multiple options that North Salt Lake has to offer to people. Some years are going to be years where we develop an area like Foxborough, not necessarily anymore because we don't have a lot of land stock, but that we are currently in a cycle where it feels like there's tons of high density, and there is, but in the long range, we're still at percentages that make a lot of sense for our demographics and our location to Salt Lake and the demand that we have in the area. So it is the balance, but it can't always be quite so narrow that, like, right now we should say no to these because we don't have as many single families, where it's like, well, if you look back a little bit, we may actually be very well balanced if we can keep a wider scope perspective of what the planning has done, and the master plan has done a really good job of that, of kind of keeping this long-term view of what we want to have happen, instead of just get panicked about, oh, currently right now it looks like this is all we're doing, where it is, but like you're saying, the market shifts and changes, and as that free market moves, different things, different applications come in. So
and it shifted a lot recently. That's, you know, when I remember sitting down to the master plan, I thought it was great, looked wonderful, but, you know, because I thought it'd be 20 years out and it'd never affect me. there's two groups of people that I feel we are totally leaving out of the master plan. That is the over 55 community and those that need ADA accessibility. Every apartment complex that has come in, I ask them how many units, and they say the bare minimum, because that's all we have to put in. There are so many people right now that are ADA, that need the ADA, that cannot get into a project because there is not enough units. And so I think, like what Ryan says, what are we telling developers? Those baby boomers are becoming now retirees. They don't want to be in a huge acre lot. They want to be in more of a community with people that are their own age and stuff. We need to be telling developers, look, this is what we need in North Salt Lake. We would accept a over 55 high density housing unit. We would accept a ADA accessible apartment complex unit if every single bottom unit was ADA accessible.
So thanks.
We're talking like the counters at level, not adjustable, like
ready to go. So by law, a certain percentage has to be ADA, right? If it's over so many units. I guess my question is, if that was the case with the market, if I was a developer and I saw this huge demand, I'd go, I have to put in 6 ADA units, but I'm going to put in 20. Because
it costs the developer more to make it ADA.
Well,
I have a friend who lives in the section of town that I used to live in by the North Salt Lake Post Office. And he and his wife are in a split level. And they've been in a split level since before I moved in, and that was 20 years ago. He's in a wheelchair. If he would have gone to a developer, if he would have gone to Woodside and Foxborough and said, this is a house I need and I need it to be built ADA compliant, they would have done it. If he would go to...
And he would have paid a little extra.
And he would have paid a little extra, but he would have the house now with no stairs and with, you know, single level. And they didn't choose to do that, and now they're looking to do that. Well, there's not a place in North Salt Lake they can do that right now unless they get in on one of these condos. and have someone put in an elevator or something. But I just think the market has to be allowed to take care of that, and that people have to be able to say, I'm going to pay a little bit more to get what I need, because that's what we all do in the market.
Well, I mean, you're right. And years ago, we had Maria Wilson come in, who has really toured our status, who has to want to build a home behind the veterinary clinic, right? And we made sure she could build her home there. It was ADA approach, accessible and usable for her. It was an exception. She owned the property, it was adjacent to a school. We did all that deliberately and made it possible, but she asked.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I go back, and of course, part of it was the economy because it's driven, but we put Belvedere in.
And
Belvedere was a huge community.
And
just
it was supposed to be 55 and over. When 55 and over. I'm like, we did that when I was on the planning commission
right.
The first time.
Right. Belvedere was 55 and over. It was all ADA. Elevators every place had actually on site staff
wow.
to help people if they wanted it. Because partly because of the economy, though, it did kind of come right after the big crash. But
yeah, and the homes that take it, the homes that are around it that were supposed to be the same roof, they've got master bedrooms on the second level, and you know, there's no way it's.
But the first building is over 55
yeah.
and ADA accessible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do have one big building. That's before your time change.
It's there isn't a word. Like I know what it is.
Yeah.
And there's a waiting list for people to get in there. Like.
Well, they sure didn't want to build buildings 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Well, during the recession, they didn't, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, even after, and some of those people that lived there weren't happy with us either. So.
Yeah.
Let's let's kind of work things in a little bit. We're kind of 2 hours in. So, if we go back, do we want to revisit the town center plan? I'm hearing no. Is there anybody that's interested in revisiting the town center plan?
I voted in the town center plan. Does that include my property?
No.
Okay.
Town center plan does include significantly additional high density units.
It does include the vacant property, but not the property with houses on it.
I think we need to look at Orchard again. And I think we need to, when Ryan's talking about unintended consequences, we've got these transportation corridors that we've identified, like Highway 89 and Orchard, but you build those two things on the end of Odell, and the unintended consequences are they're not going in and out from Highway 89 or Orchard. They're going in and out from this street in this neighborhood. And so maybe we need to look at, when we look at Highway 89 and Orchard, probably not Redwood because the houses don't go that close to the street, but we don't want high density in the middle of the neighborhood or through the neighborhood. We want it on the transportation corridors.
So, is there a general consensus we do want to look at Orchard?
And we just approved apartments right across the street from where Hat Park started expanding in a neighborhood.
They're not apartments, they're part of the town center and they're townhouses. And they're what the neighbors wanted and they're what the market defines and they're part of the town center.
But that's the problem though, is everybody keeps saying we don't want to put them into the neighborhoods. We just put them into the neighborhood.
Well, but from what I understand, the neighbors were supportive of
it. Well, they were supportive like I was supportive, okay? They didn't want the three duplexes with no control versus the apartment building. But I don't know.
They did not want, out of the two lesser plans, I mean, that's what they wanted.
Right.
But they didn't want multifamily housing there. Ever.
Then that needs to be a
We're talking about one that's just getting built.
The one that's going to be across from Hatch Park when we expand Hatch Park.
They're talking about R17 zoning, is what they're talking about. It's R17 zoning that allows for duplexes at a certain density, and all the plans in R17 come in and they say, would you rather have, you know, four duplexes, or would you rather have one cohesive building that looks nicer with all these upgrades?
That's the problem that you're seeing. That's the problem that you're seeing. You're putting that right in the middle of
a neighborhood that the neighborhood didn't want multifamily units.
Well, then, but that was the master plan from how many years ago?
Well, yeah, well, no, but that I understand. That's the town center master plan.
So this was the master plan from 2006. So the idea here, this is not just an idea of housing. It's the idea that the park will expand out to 150 North and out to Main Street, and that this set of lots has very little connection to this neighborhood here.
But that's how the whole entire neighborhood gets there.
Well, I think that's what
is that road.
That
is the access to that neighborhood.
That may be so, but those units are going to face the park, and that's the idea.
Is that R17
or R17? That's
R17. The problem is the neighborhood that is there is going now to feel totally disconnected from everything else. Because everybody would have an access question then.
They're not taking the road out.
No, we're not talking access. We're talking cohesive unit neighborhood.
I promise you, living in Foxborough, that you can have multifamily and single family in the same neighborhood.
Listen, I have people knocking on my door every night now because they're seeing these units go in. And they're like, what happened? And why did this happen? And I said, because it's in the master plan. I said, I'm sorry, but it's in the master plan. You either had duplexes or you had this. And nobody in that neighborhood is now happy.
Well, because people I talked to, these had choice. James, I talked to 6 or 7. So we said nobody. Somebody there, at least. But
on that road, you talk to people.
Yes.
So did it turn into the master plan for the Park City Center? That's the question.
Sounds like it.
Is there a public will to revisit the city center master plan?
I think the people that live just outside are now looking at the master plan and the town center plan and going, this is going to affect me. This is going to affect how our neighborhood feels.
But I want to say that an obvious point, but a very true point. Planning by NIMBY negative reaction leads to a crappy city.
Yeah.
Because then you can become totally afraid of any change. And so I think you have to balance that, you have to consider it, but that's not the only consideration
right.
in a plan like this.
But the problem is you're taking out a whole, you're planning to take out a whole entire row of housing that has been for years, that have been cohesive with the housing that's right behind it, and put multifamily housing in it. And the housing that's behind it, the people that are living there now, are not feeling cohesiveness now with that
road. I think that we have to unpack what you're talking about. Like, what does the cohesive mean? And
they're not feeling like they can be neighbors with these people that are going to be coming in, because it's a total different housing units that are going in.
Well, they're wrong, because they can't. You can be neighbors.
But you can't tell people they're wrong.
No, you can tell people that if you don't feel like you can be neighbors with someone who lives in a townhouse, then you're wrong, right? I can tell someone that.
Lock my neighborhood and tell everyone.
Can I throw one more factor into this whole equation? Property owners have rights.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Dee's property, he may want it to be a certain way, and his kids may want it totally different because they're looking at it like someday they'll inherit this, and if I can put 57 units on it, it's worth a lot more money. Anyway, if I'm living on this street behind here, I may be taking a long-term view that this could potentially make my $200,000 home worth a lot more if I can, you know. But I'd have to relocate somewhere else, obviously. Anyway, this is something I started with from day one. And I turned to the mayor and I go, where is King Solomon? You know, and we need him. We're taking this baby into.
Yeah.
But how do you, you know, there is here the Orchard Grove thing was a perfect example. Now, how do you take the rights of this property owner versus the neighbor's wishes? Mm-hmm.
and it's a complex equation.
If I could just point out too, it's made more complicated by a zoning district that didn't give the council a choice between two good options. So you have duplexes, so these guys have a right, an outright permitted right to do duplexes, or we agreed, and that's what we did, to approve something better, at least that's what we thought, than duplexes on that property. In addition, following the plan, but I mean, I agree, if we need to revisit the plan,
We're asking you just a moment, if we want to revisit this concept.
That's got a great point on it. Okay. Can I have a comment on that question of the master plan? So we have this thing that we've been repeating a lot, which is retail is dead. But it's not totally dead.
No.
Okay.
And it's just mostly dead.
Yes.
Not dead yet.
I don't know how what I'm about to say is to put into a plan. But I think we need to define where we want to go to that for retail, and maybe the city partners in development and says, look, we will come and be a partner. This is the condition. The condition is you will have retail on the main floor. And yeah, you'll probably lose money, but it's part of us nurturing something better over time. And then maybe if we can get, like, let's say that we get a Main Street type feel on center. And it struggles, and then we get enough of a cohesive feeling that, I mean, I'll be aggressive just to make the point, but we get Restaurant Row. We get South Davis's real Restaurant Row. We kick Bountiful's butt, you know? And then it takes off, you know? Now, we have to figure out how we do that. I don't think we just let the Holton Market's going to do that. But maybe there's some big things that we've got to do that we just like make a tweak and decide, well, we're going to be more strategic and aggressive.
Yeah. I agree, but we have to be so careful with those from a public.
Yeah.
Because I know several other people were there, but at the neighborhood meeting for Winegar's, they literally took a vote of which business they wanted to be there. You know, people say, okay, who wants a Trader Joe's? Yeah. It was weird.
The same thing happened out by Lee's Market. On Facebook, it was like, oh man, a Burger King's coming in. I wanted a Chipotle. You know, it's like, okay. Here's the chance to live the American dream. Okay, I'm going to ask them.
Let me just grab, because the end thing I'm curious to make sure we have. Consensus. Yeah, just zoom in on where the gas station is up there. Sunshine Cafe. Where's Sunshine Cafe?
Oh, right there.
The big star is. Okay. Again, so the master plan calls for multifamily housing and I want you to drive there.
Mixed use.
Mixed use, but basically it's multifamily.
Yeah.
It's commercial and multifamily.
Okay. Just so I know, we're all happy to. It sounds like we're okay with the master plan, the town center master plan. The next question I have is that I'd like to just consider, do we think that changing form-based codes or that, you know, fixing some of these ordinances is going to be enough? Or do we want to look at master planning between, let's say, Orchard and the freeway north?
I'm sorry, tell me what you're talking about, Orchard and the Freeway North.
So, north of the town center.
Except what Ryan just brought up is because east of Orchard.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Orchard Corridor, you're just saying.
The Orchard Corridor.
The Orchard Corridor, do we just need to look at those?
I think we need to look at the corridors again. So I think we need to look at unintended consequences, and I think we need to look at probabilities.
I think we should
We want a master plan there, or do we think we can do it with just our ordinances?
Do you want to see the form-based code first? Like, let's schedule another work session in a month, and we bring back some of these ideas that you've given us today, and see if we think we can hit them with those ordinance changes, and then we can identify where we're not hitting those, and then we need to reopen the master plan rather than just going.
And wouldn't it be great if you could give suggestions of the details on a form-based code change that would help guide and direct?
Yeah, bring that back to you so you have something, because right now I think you don't have anything to frame in what the form-based code does or what a general plan would look like. But let's come back together in a month and see where we're at, and we can try to see if we can address some of these things that you brought up tonight, and then if that's not satisfactory, then we can go to the general plan.
Which would be really important for any person or developer that comes in
and
says, hey, here's a form-based code, I know what I can and can't do. They're not going to come up and spend all kinds of dollars and then say no.
Mm-hmm. And the form-based code works, I guess we can
let's talk about
apply
it.
Apply that code to
and see where it doesn't fix what you're talking about here. We may then say, hey, we really need to look more at this Main Street neighborhood in R17, and we need to look at the Orchard Drive corridor, because we haven't addressed that as an edge neighborhood.
So I agree we should all understand the form of code a little better. I'm a little more of a traditionalist when it comes to this question of Orchard Drive. And I think we just need to go through the land use planning process and decide. Maybe we ought to decide we'll never rezone those properties, because there are only 10 right now, and not every property ought to eventually evolve up into a condo or a apartment project. You know, but I think we need to go through a land use planning exercise for this corridor to say, you know, this is the place we want to have some change, maybe, or not, you know.
I agree with you, Ken, because the form-based code is not going to address the Orchard Drive stuff.
From there, we make decisions on zoning.
Okay. Do we want to look at you think we're going to do something on Main Street, right?
Yes.
Do you want to look at what area that he lives in, or is that any part of Main Street?
It's part of Main Street.
There's only one property, and that's the one I own, that's the big one. But really about to get commercial property. And so it could go to the east side, and they could develop it there. But the house next to me also has a big, funny-shaped property, and she's not been in that back there for 30 years, and it's a weed patch this height you'll never see. And so there's some areas that are not the ones on Main Street that are all an acre of business up on Orchard. Something's going to happen to those where somebody's going to say, I can't afford to live here anymore. The county has raised my taxes. They've now got me up to $3,000 a year for my garden. They have taxed me. I'm retired. I'm on fixed income. A lot of these people you're talking about are the same boat. They're being taxed out of their houses. So what are you going to do about it? Because nobody else is going to have the same feeling that they have. Well, I want this big garden, I want this big backyard, I want this. You better talk about that with a lot of other people. So I think you ought to individually drive around and say, here's a piece of property, or have showing what I said, here's a piece of property that's a half an acre or larger. I don't know if you want to go down smaller than that. But if it's a half an acre, you can put on two or three buildings. I think you ought to address those, because it's going to happen in the next 10 years, and something's going to be needed to be done on this.
Sherry, doesn't the Main Street plan include Lawless's property?
Yes. No, it doesn't go into the neighborhood, but it does take in, it goes around the Arrowhead property and then do Lawless's, and it kind of sticks in there until it gets down to North Station.
So we'll have some direction from that plan.
Yeah. I think we can identify the brown property.
Does that include the brown property?
I don't know who the brown.
The Norris Strip?
Yes, it includes that one, yes.
Okay.
This is all the brown property.
How do trying to make sure as more uniform what we do there, going back to what Ted was talking about, are we allowing a transition at all? That, like, if we've got way high density here and then the neighborhood, are we going to allow that to be a little permeable on those edges, or is it a hard stop?
That's a great question, and I think that's a master plan.
That's what Lisa's saying, that we need to be uniform in how we address these applications. And so if we have that, this is how we handle the edges.
The farm base could actually go outside of the town center just a little bit, and it calls those edge neighborhoods. And we kind of, we're trying to make a transition between the town. So I'd like to really be able to show you that, the way it's drafted.
So farm base code, though, deals with the urban form, not land use.
As I was talking about with the Shirai at the top, there's a little brown section of RM20. No, that's RM7 right there. That's RM20. Right now, there's some slumlord apartments there. And they really are really bad.
In a bad way.
In a bad way. I mean, they're really bad. I've done lots of service in those. I know them. They're really bad. But I can tell you that's RM20 right now. So we have a moratorium for 6 months. But if the developer tore down the two fourplex and built 20 units to the acre right there in the middle of RM110, they would have a legal right to do it today. It's zoned that way. And I bet every single neighbor would fill City Hall frustrated beyond belief that 20 units are going in right there, even though it's already zoned that way. Mm-hmm. But to the neighbors, it's not, right? To the neighbors. So I think that's the type of outreach that a charrette could do on an Orchard Drive complex and say, what do you want here? What's your feedback here? What do we need to do? And if we need to rezone some property or set some guidelines or do a master plan there, it's that RM20 on Orchard, it's the R17 on Orchard, it's the large acreage on Orchard, and then up on Center too, the ones you mentioned up on Center. All of those are prime for redevelopment, and they already have entitlements. And the landowners have entitlements, and those are all going to be issues in that edge network.
Can you say those again? The R120, the R17, not Orchard. What were the other ones?
This is RM20, 20 units to the acre. That's legally allowed right there today.
Okay.
If the developer bought it, if your brother bought it, it'd probably look nice. If somebody else bought it, I'd worry about it. But someone's going to buy it, and it's going to go. This property is prime for development. This property on the corner, I've looked at the plan that the owner had that wanted to put 20 units right there on the corner. I said, that's probably too dense for right there on the corner, but the landowner that owns that house, that person's dead, mm-hmm. and that house is planning to be redeveloped, and it's right on the corner. It's right next to RM20. It's right next to our multi-town center. It's right in the edge, and the developer and the family is prime to say, I want 20 units to acre. Like, what's going to happen there? What's going to happen here? This is R17, so that's duplexes right now. They have a legal right for duplexes, or if that's the same thing that we have right here, they could do, or would you rather have six duplexes that you don't want, or would you rather have this nice-looking building that you do want, and your neighbors are going to say, I don't want either option, because it's R110, and you're going to say, those three units are not R110, I'm really sorry, right? They're going to be frustrated about that. The neighbors across the street are R110, but they'll be frustrated, they'll be right on right there. These acres right here, those are all 1 acre lots.
Yeah.
All of those are planned for development. I think this is what our master plan doesn't address.
And they're skinny and deep like that.
They're super skinny and deep. They all have one, it's a one home frontage, it's as if you had a quarter acre lot, but then you have 3/4 worth of houses behind you.
Yeah, I can see
changes to your zoning will give us direction.
There's probably tunnels under
there. Is everybody okay to go and just look at this? What resources would that take, Ken?
I think we'll do it.
I still think we really should considering on the R17 is going back to the way it was originally
thought out, because I was one of the guys thinking it out, and that was when we set up the density for duplexes, it was still one duplex on the lot, and that got changed. And I read the code, and I still think it kind of looks that way, but we could put a couple of words in there to let somebody know that the density is, that we're specifying there is for one building. And that's where, when we intended it, that's when we put it down, that was all of it. And the only reason we did that is because we had a whole bunch of duplexes. I know Jerry doesn't want to admit it, but that was the high-density area before we built anything else. That was where all the duplexes were. But we didn't want to make those all non-conforming. So we looked at it and said, okay, how much land is this, these duplexes on? They were on pretty small lots. And that's how we came up with those figures. But we never had the intention ever to allow multiple duplexes on one lot. And that kind of got misinterpreted and transformed over the years.
Can you subdivide the lot to, if it meets the requirements of the...
But then it requires a lot more land.
Yeah, it has to meet
the language is not very clear, and it's not... It's not in line with what the practice is as far as intent. So you need to tighten that up and make it more explicit. It needs to be explicit. There's some things that are implied, but there are things... It just needs to be explicit.
It's just to make it explicit, say, one building per lot.
But they have to have room to make it a few districts.
Right, or you split the lot, but they usually don't have room to split the lots.
I just kind of look at it, it looks like this little area that probably is right for redevelopment, and the plan kind of how well to redevelop seems wise to me.
And well, that's true too, but I think we could, with the moratorium in place, I really think the R1, R7 ought to go back to the original intention. And if we want to make a lot of P districts in there, if we've got a bigger lot or whatever, but the density on those duplexes where we have, again, we don't have any standards on the duplexes at all. It's a really hard decision.
So what if I bought one of those lots 5 years ago, and now you're taking
it? I don't think you can talk about it taking because you know, if you're changing the density,
there has to be actual time though.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's just the density,
projected, maybe to 20 years, then I might do this.
Yeah, I think we can always defend a process where we've gone through a master plan, and we can't take people's entire.
Well, and again, I don't think it's a taking because you're not allowing development. They can come into the P district. They can assemble property in the area and do a P district and get more things on there, but. I just think it's crazy where we've done, and it's worked out in a couple of cases, but a lot of times I see that where we've allowed the math for the duplexes is what's caused a lot of grief for me. Because again, I think we look at it and say, it was never intended that way. It was one duplex on a lot. And it got misinterpreted at some point down the line, and now it's one duplex, and then you can have one little duplex based on the second duplex, and it comes up two gaps.
Other thing I wanted to bring up, and then I'll open it up a bit for questions if there are more. I don't know if we want to look at Redwood Road again. Well, now there's been a fair amount of development out there, and kind of whatever was going on. And we have some large vacant parcels there.
Can you remember?
Excuse me. I don't know, in the current market, with the current zone, those are all zone commercial, is that right?
Yeah, the beds.
Excuse me.
Put the zoning on the area.
If you use the other zoning one, it'll click the other zoning one above that one.
Oh.
And it makes it a little transparent.
Sherry, you are brilliant.
So, I mean, my only question, if you want to look at that at all, and talking to Ken, he probably is okay with it, I guess, but we have several vacant parcels along there now. I think it's one of those things where there's all CG, is that what they are?
Yes.
Well, scroll down a little bit. The ones that can see names are 11.
We're going to develop if we leave them at CG.
Okay, so that intersection, right, you've got some bigger parcels. And do we really think commercials are ever going to go in there?
That many. That's a lot of acres.
That's the area that I keep thinking.
And I have concerns with the stuff that's on the other side of Center Street because I worry if we start getting in a rush to develop down there, we're going to end up with like some crappy warehouse or something, when if we wait 5 or 10 years, we could get a business park or something.
What are you looking at?
I'm sorry, will you scroll towards Center Street? Yes, is that what it is? So all of that area, I don't want it to develop into warehouses now, if it can be something nicer in 5 or 10 years if we wait.
And you're saying the gun club?
All of that.
I mean, they've already come in with their plans.
All of the stuff that's just kind of, yeah, that way.
Yeah, that.
I think you're too late.
I think you're too late.
Have I seen that?
I don't think it's.
I think you were late to that.
That was a privilege.
Well, you don't let them go over there and think it comes to now, like you were.
Somebody three times turned the desk, turned somebody down there to a little concept thing.
The only two lots that stay are the one up there on the northeast side. No, that's Maverick.
That's a Maverick going.
Northeast of Kimball's.
There's two lots, that one and that one.
Yep.
They're still there, they're gonna be still there.
They're across the street.
Natalie, I'll show you the plan, we'll talk.
If you thought came through planning.
But may I have a mandatory swim team parent meeting?
Okay, sorry.
What changed for the?
One thing to think about too is we can have a CDA on this that's been triggered, and so.
If we wait.
If we wait, we won't get money, if we build it now, then we'll get money to do something with, we don't know what. I don't know, that should have started then, but.
It does matter. I've swallowed my opinion and voted for things because the clock's ticking. Like Eaglewood Village, for example.
So there's a lot of stuff that's on, there are several vacant parcels there that I don't know that will ever, with CDA, that will ever happen. I don't know, but we don't have to master plan right now, we can wait and see.
What kind of businesses do you think you'd want to see there? Because we can work out your deals.
It
was just last time, it was just last week. It was last week at City Council and the week before at Planning Commission.
And it's, yeah, it's not down, it's not totally planned out, but it's to the point now you can change it.
I just want to see how much.
But we are forming what the development agreement says, so if you have some opinions about the types of businesses you'd like to see in there.
Well, I think it's like, I'd like to see a senior citizen, over 50 type community, you know, I think that'd be great.
There's any residents, so that'd be great.
There's no residential one that's on the Kimball parcel, so.
Have we found a consensus on what we're.
It's along with the concrete wall.
We gotta deal with, you're a perfect example of, it's, you know, that's the transition, and we have decided on looking at Orchard and.
So right here, Redwood Road, we have retail, office, hotel, restaurant. We assume that we'll be picking, I'm actually working to pick up this property and these properties for the. So that they can be included in the.
So this is office.
Yeah, hotels, interested, yes.
Yeah.
This is, this is kind of the, there's a project in Draper. We're trying to work out a field trip, so you guys can go see, everyone here, Planning Commission and City Council, can see these buildings in Draper. These are drawings, but the same development group has run a project in Draper.
Who's here?
I'm really not concerned with the way that they're going to build. Is that correct?
Well,
I'm a little bit, because it's very commercial, right?
It is, but again, you look at it, it's like we're going to go commercially. We're going to do a gas station, and we want to get another gas station.
It's a good gas station.
Those three lots there, I think we ought to at least let the public give us their thoughts, because what are you going to put there?
55 and under, master on the main level, dwelling units.
And medical cannabis.
with the medical cannabis dispensary.
So we're underutilizing the roof on this building, and I think we could make a cash crop.
That's an idea.
Anyway, those three lots, I think, will be out of what the public talk about, because I'm afraid they're going to come in at some point. And I'm not sure you're going to get a good agreement on it, but I don't.
So maybe we need some focused design charrettes on these few areas?
I would say waste those three lots. I don't think you need to all get them.
All three of those in the CDA.
Well, if you go down, there are several lots that are open there, and I don't know what we're going to do with that.
Yeah, these are big lots, so the left, these other ones are pretty small.
This lot is currently unplanned.
But I guess I would be careful with these ones with commercial, because it's like we've just been joking that, well, we'd like a Trader Joe's. That doesn't necessarily mean what they're going to get.
No.
We can't, just because they want that doesn't mean.
But if it's in the CDA and we have a charrette, we could go back and say, we have a TIF that we can incentivize the right development.
Well, maybe we could talk to some brokers to give us advice on what we need to be attracting.
And does the clock start on the CDA when we start the charrettes?
It starts with the lease. The lease benefits from the CDA, that's how lease is there, is they receive $1 million plus, you know, returns of sales tax for the neighboring businesses, everything to incentivize them to build in the first place. There's other CDA money that would be available with other construction that we can incentivize some other construction on the corridor if there's anything else we really want to get.
Like all these buildings would generate
CDA.
Some of this tax increment money that the city would use.
When is the clock running out? What is that?
12 years.
Oh, yeah. It was a 15-year CDA, and we triggered it 3 years ago.
Yeah. Might be 11, actually. So.
I think it would be good to replan those three lots, Dan.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's just, there's one. And maybe throw in the GE building, because even though it's in a commercial zone, I just don't see commercial going in there.
Yeah.
Actually, it's an industrial zone.
There's some stuff going on.
I think it's that manufacturer. I'm sure the partners
are huge. There's some interest in that.
There's some stuff going on right now that I'm working on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it good stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good stuff.
All right. I just worried that if I was good out there, I would go, whoa, that looks like an opportunity.
But you need to go to the other part of the building. Okay, so Ken, did we talk about the things that we wanted as far as master plan issues? When we got the scope narrowed down, we're going to open it up. Is there anything else anybody wants to talk about that we think we need to deal with? We're going to look at the form-based code. Well, look at the master plan areas for Orchard and for kind of the tower, the center area, the other main street, and then we'll look at some of the roads.
And then the moratorium ends when?
About 5 minutes.
Do we have time enough to do all that?
Well, I can change the codes probably within the next 5 minutes.
I should apologize for hijacking the meeting totally. So the rest of the stuff's important, and then you should listen.
Well, I want you to have this list to know what I'm thinking about, and yeah. So you can give me some feedback to what you think is a priority, or if you think things need to be moved up on the priority list. But so you can also see that there's a tremendous amount of work that we can do.
Is this listed in priority order?
Kind of in my priority order, but I don't know what your priority order would be, so you can tell me if you think I'm...
I mean, I'd probably, not that we have to finish one before moving into another, but I'd probably number them and shift it just to reflect the conversation.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to number it until after we had this conversation.
Yeah. And I also think we need to take advantage of our chairman before he's off. the planning commission.
Well, we have to change that so that he can stay for the year.
We can change that law.
Maybe we should.
We never had that before, you know.
See, when my time is up, they were happy to give it.
We can change it back now that you're off.
You have to run for city council to get off the planning commission.
I do think there is a time issue driving the zoning changes. So we are in the moratorium. We'll make sure we get that critical work done before the moratorium ends. And then, anyway, we'll start it all and then.
And we're fine on the borrowing income plan, right?
We are. What about today?
Do we want to schedule another work session like at the first planning commission meeting in October? Because at this point, I can plan ahead so I can tell applicants that we're doing another work session and we can kind of regroup with an outline. I'll come up with an outline of work plan for what needs to be done and make sure everybody goes off on that.
Sure.
Would that work?
Better plan on that. Something to the moratorium.
Don't be thinking you're getting sizzler every time.
Yeah, next time we have to. That would be so much fun.
The point motion to adjourn. Can we have an honorary event happening on next. It is Steve Councilmember Brian Horace's birthday today. And he quickly sing. He sang to me on my birthday. I think it's only fair.
Motion to adjourn?
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? First, we have to come in for the time of your service. We need to speak a little bit about the issue.
No, we're still. I'm going to go to the next one.